You are listening to Prometheus by Minute. I'm your host, Connor Coulson. This is Minute 62. This minute opens with Yannick asking Vickers if she's a robot, and ends with Milburn saying, "On behalf of scientists everywhere, I am ashamed to count you amongst us." After Yannick asks Vickers if she's a robot, her response is, "My room, 10 minutes. I have to wonder, how does she feel about being compared to a robot? Has this happened before? I imagine it's happened before. In the Paradise script, the only difference is that Yannick says "prove it" before Vickers says "my room, 10 minutes. So there's a bit more of a "oh, I'll show you" kind of attitude going on. I think it's a funny interaction. I genuinely like this moment. And I don't think it comes out of nowhere. I think these characters have been developing all this time in this direction. Side note, is Yannick the only accordion player to get laid? I mean, Idris could make anything look good. This scene also ties into the casual sex idea that was proposed but never actualized in the first Alien. Her reaction is about the same, as if he'd offered her a drink. Eh, you know, why not? Let's relax and loosen up a bit. It's just sort of this enjoyable activity to pass the time. My friend Gray has a bit to say on this scene. Vickers is a female boss, the kind which most men find obnoxious and domineering. Male subordinates often react to powerful women like this by eroticizing them to diminish them. Given that Vickers presents herself as anything but a sex kitten, it's all jokes and fantasies on the guy's part. But then Yannick finds a way to actually get an invitation to have sex with her in one sentence, and it's never referred to her again. Vickers seems more powerful after that part of the film, like when she kills Charlie, she's no longer sexualized. And I agree, this is a woman fully consenting to sex, she wasn't bullied or harassed into it. She's just as powerful after this scene as she was before it. Yannick is a cheeky bugger, but he's got no ill will towards her, and doesn't see her as a mere conquest. They seem to have a real chemistry, and they're both mature characters, which we actually don't see a lot of. Later, I will discuss a deleted scene which further demonstrates that maturity. I believe a lot of this comes down to two very talented actors who are able to convey so much through subtext and body language. Unfortunately, this is a podcast, so I can't show you, but if you watch this minute, you can see a real ease between these two. They're definitely flirting. And the result is appealing and fun. It's very hard to make these things seem genuine. It's not an easy thing to act. You've either got the chemistry there or you don't. We can see Charlize's natural hair colour at the roots here. This is listed as a goof on IMDb, and for the longest time I thought, oh, that's pedantic, I'm sure it's not that obvious. I think I had it in mind that it might change between scenes, but no, in the last minute she looked freshly bleached, and not 30 seconds later she's got an inch of regrowth. So whoever put that on IMDb was right, but still pedantic. Interesting that this note doesn't extend to David. Though, as far as I can recall, especially thus far, his roots have been perfectly bleached, you don't see much regrowth, if at all. It sounds like an absolute nightmare for continuity. In real life, if you've got dark roots coming through, it's no big deal. I have heard anecdotally from stylists that for movies, they have to bleach the roots as often as once a week. This can be especially difficult with characters with bright coloured hair. For example, Lilu in Fifth Element. Mila was having her hair coloured so frequently, they almost killed her hair. It's hard to keep it that vibrant orange, so if you look closely, you can tell when she's wearing a wig and when it's her real hair. Or maybe it's just me that notices these things. It's like in The Crossing, the Alien Covenant prequel short film. Fassbender's definitely wearing a blonde wig, because obviously his hair would have been as it is as Walter. And it looks pretty good, especially the way they shoot it. It's pretty dark. You don't see it that closely, but especially short wigs. I couldn't imagine them getting away with that. So I guess for some characters, it's just necessary. You're going to have to bleach the actor's hair, but sometimes you can just get away with a wig. Actually, I think they should have just done that in the first place with the Fifth Element. I don't know why they used her natural hair. Not to get too far off topic here, but I have something to add that I missed way back in minutes 6 and 7. IMDb points out that Holloway is wearing an orange jacket in minute 6, and a khaki one in minute 7. Well, they say red and grey like complete amateurs, but that's beside the point. I argue that he took the orange jacket off, and he's actually wearing four layers. A t-shirt, not visible, but presumably there. A vest, a khaki jacket, and an orange puffer jacket over the top of all that. This would actually be a very difficult mistake to make when making a film. And the costume crew on Prometheus seem to know their stuff. In order for a jacket to change colour like that, there would need to be two jackets somewhere. And this sort of error is more common in television. For example, in Star Trek, especially the original series, you see uniforms change and swap around a bit because they just haven't figured out the rules for it yet. Or it happens because of late reshoots, but again, that tends to happen on smaller or more amateur productions. Yannick sings Love the One You're With, and it's pretty funny. Idris is the man, he can do anything. He can be funny, he can be sexy, he can be badass, he can be scary. I'm glad to see him getting more roles now. I've been a fan since Luther. Can't believe that show is almost 10 years old now. Idris for the next Bond. It's what I want. We cut to a brief glimpse of the skull atop the pyramid in the storm. The sound design is nice here. They seem to have used shattered glass in the mix, which really helps to create the sense that the storm is powerful and dangerous. It informs our subconscious that this could slice through you. It feels sharp. We now return to Fifield and Milburn in the headroom. All of the ampules are leaking now. When Fifield asks what the black stuff is, cut to... Okay, bear with me here. I'm going to tell you how I viewed this scene all these years. Okay? So Fifield asks what all this black stuff is. And then we cut to Milburn seemingly just absolutely saying, gazpacho. And first of all, I didn't know what gazpacho was. So I had to look that up, and it's a Spanish soup served cold, apparently. I mean, all I could go with, all the context I had was he's just randomly saying gazpacho. So I'm like, is he saying the black stuff is gazpacho? I mean, it's not even red, it's black. What are you talking about? And yeah, it wasn't until I actually read the script, specifically the Paradise one, that it dawned on me. So, this is the scene, as written by Damon Lindelof. Milburn taps on his wrist console. That's kind of what he wrote, I guess that's the sound. Inside his helmet, a small straw slowly rises up to his lips. He takes a long sip. Milburn, yum, gazpacho. So, I went back and looked at the movie and looked at the scene again, and I looked really closely. Sure enough, there's a straw there. I had never seen that. Because of the way it's lit, it's just the yellow light is going right through the clear tube. So it's barely visible. I mean, I've seen this on an IMAX screen. I've watched this movie on big TVs many times. It's only now, watching my laptop and zooming right in, that I saw, oh, he's drinking from a straw. Never saw that. This movie's full of surprises still. I think if they'd shown us the straw coming out, obviously it's a little bit difficult in terms of special effects, like you'd have to build a mechanism into the helmet to do that, or you have to do it with CGI. But without seeing that happen or having any dialogue around it, it's just, ooh, gazpacho. Okay, cool. And especially after Fifield just asked Milburn a question, and he doesn't respond to that question. So all we're left with, if we cannot see a transparent straw, is dude loves the word gazpacho. Good for him, I guess. And conversely, we have Fifield described thusly in Paradise. Fifield, meanwhile, is getting something entirely different from his straw. Exhales a lungful of smoke into his helmet, taps his wrist, whoosh, the smoke vents out through the suit's exhaust. Milburn can't believe his eyes. Milburn, what the hell are you doing? Fifield, isn't it obvious? Smoking. Milburn, you put tobacco in your respirator? Fifield, sure man, tobacco. Milburn looks at him. Fifield grins goofily. Draw your own conclusions. That all makes perfect sense in the script, but not so much in the movie. I have to wonder how many people didn't understand the Gazpacho line too. I don't know why Feifel was being so coy about smoking weed. Like, unless it was a censorship thing, I assume in the future it's perfectly legal. Or maybe Walter has a bad boy streak and is breaking the law. So, overall, I would say this is the weakest minute. Purely because it's not conveying anything particularly clearly. Interesting to note that those tubes in their helmets disappear in a few moments. And okay, so we can assume that when they're not being used, they just retract. But again, if we had seen this thing in action and we knew what was going on, it's only clear with Fifield because you can actually see him sucking on it and exhaling. But I think that's basically all I have to say about that. I'm just baffled, honestly. Alright, that about covers it. This is Coulson signing off. You can find me on TravianDesigns.com, TravianDesigns, or Prometheus by Minute on Facebook.